From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell with the news on this day in Maine, February 20th, 2020. Democratic State Senator Shenna Bellows from Manchester has introduced emergency legislation to increase funding for home-based care programs. Mal Leary has more.
Bellows says she introduced the measure after the state's largest home care agency announced it was closing. Home Care for Maine, based in Farmingdale, says state reimbursements have not kept up with increases in the minimum wage and other mandated costs. Senate Republicans were quick to point out they had supported increases in reimbursement rates in the two-year budget that Democrats did not. The bill carries a price tag of $8.5 million and has yet to have a public hearing. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
A Portland-based startup that owns and operates veterinary hospitals from eastern New York to Maine is looking to expand partnerships. Chief Executive Officer Dan Espinal says in addition to buying a majority share in a practice, Rare Breed Veterinary Partners can offer administrative support to sellers.
What ends up happening is you usually get a much higher quality of life because you've freed up a lot of time. So you get money. You continue to own the business and practice medicine and run the business the way you have in the past, and you get a lot of business support.
Espinal says Rare Breed is currently partnering with 10 practices and hopes to triple that number by the end of the year. Rare Breed Veterinary Partners has been able to raise $42 million of equity capital since its founding in 2018. And a Massachusetts company has acquired most of what's left of the boats owned by a former fishing magnate known as the Codfather, who was forced out of the industry following an elaborate fraud. Carlos Rafael was the owner of one of the largest commercial fishing operations in the U.S. before his arrest for dodging quotas and smuggling profits led to his downfall. The New Bedford, Massachusetts fishing and processing company Blue Harvest announced today it's reached an agreement to buy a dozen of Rafael's boats. Some members of the fishing industry had hoped that Rafael's assets would be spread among the many buyers in different ports.
On the next Maine Calling, live from the Camden Conference, the media revolution changing the world. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Join me, Marketplace Morning Report host David Brancaccio, and Harvard's Nick O'Mealy for a conversation about the changing face of media. And if you're in the area, come check out the show. It's free. Maine Calling, Friday, live at 1 and rebroadcast at 8 on Maine Public Radio.
This Day in Maine is made possible by the Dempsey Center, making life better for people managing the impact of cancer. Locations in Lewiston and South Portland. DempseyCenter.org.
Well, in less than 2 weeks, Mainers will cast their votes on a referendum seeking to repeal a new law that removes religious and philosophical exemptions for vaccines. Rates of non-medical exemptions in Maine are double the national average, and they continue to rise. The debate is stoking the memories of polio survivors who lived through a time when immunizations were not available for certain diseases. Patty White reports.
Sitting at her dining room table in West Gardner, 72-year-old Ann Crocker sifts through a pile of photos from her childhood.
This was a picture of me showing my family on that Sunday. Here, look, I can take my first step.
Crocker was taking that step after being seriously ill.
I had polio when I had just turned 5, 3 years before the Salk vaccine came out.
It was September of 1952, and Crocker remembers she wasn't feeling well. She was sitting on a couch in her family's home in Livermore Falls, drinking a cup of juice. At the time, polio paralyzed more than 16,000 people a year in the U.S. and caused more than 1,800 deaths. Crocker's mother worried about the virus, and Crocker tried to reassure her.
And I moved around. See, I'm okay, Mom. I'm a little tired. And she says, why don't you lie down on the couch? And the next time I went to reach for the cup, I could not move my arms.
Her mother and grandfather rushed her to the hospital, where she was placed in isolation. As she lay in bed, Crocker was able to see her grandfather in the hallway outside.
I remember moaning and wanting my grandfather because we were close. He lived with us. And I could hear the talking, and he says, I can't come in.
Crocker says she was paralyzed up to her chin, and doctors and nurses wrapped her in warm, wet blankets to loosen her muscles. After 3 weeks, she was moved to a rehabilitation hospital in Bath, where she would spend nearly a year trying to regain movement.
We were only able to see our family for 2 hours on Sundays. That's it.
Each week, Crocker concentrated on showing her family a new skill. First, it was moving her fingers, giving a full smile, then rolling over, sitting up, and finally taking a step. She says it was grueling, painful work. Eventually, she was able to walk again, but that didn't mean she was cured.
You don't just have it and get over it. It's still with you, and it can cause problems later on. See?
Crocker rolls up her jeans to reveal two knee braces. In her mid-30s, she says she started to experience what's called post-polio syndrome. Her muscles began to weaken. Over the decades, she's added braces for her leg, knees, hands, and neck. Crocker says it's painful to walk even the few steps it takes to get her from the kitchen to her living room. Her experience is not unique.
The brace goes all the way down to my toes and all the way right up to the top of my leg. And I have to wear that every day because without it, I can't walk.
66-year-old Reginald Arsenault of Mexico, Maine, says he got polio when he was 2 or 3, around the time the vaccine first became available. Arsenault was vaccinated, but doctors suspect he already had the virus.
I was on the tail end of the epidemic.
Arsenault says he couldn't move anything below his neck. He was hospitalized for 4 months and says his recovery extended throughout his childhood. He had to relearn to walk several times.
I've had 6 surgeries altogether, 4 on one, my right leg, which was originally affected by polio. My left leg, they put steel staples in my knees to stop the growth so the right leg would catch up.
Arsenault also had surgery on his left arm, which is shorter than his right. Like Ann Crocker, he experienced post-polio syndrome in his 30s. He could no longer work. Over the years, he says he's had to get used to letting things go.
It's quite an adjustment. The last probably 10 years has gotten worse where, you know, a lot of things I used to be able to do, like mow the lawn, snowblower, shovel, I can just barely do anymore.
Diana Abbott of Moody has also had to adjust to a different life after she contracted polio as a 15-year-old in Kennebunkport. It was 1955.
I had not been vaccinated, and it came out 2 weeks later. Dr. Salk's vaccine.
Abbott says she had been feeling ill, and when she woke up one morning, she fell to the floor, unable to walk. It was late November, she says, and she wouldn't return home again till the following summer, to a different life from before. She could never walk again without using crutches and leg braces.
It changed it completely. Because you're going from a person who was very active walking. I was a cheerleader at the time. And then all of a sudden, everything is taken away from you. Everything.
In school, Abbott says she relied on boys to carry her up and down stairs. She battled doubts in college about whether she could complete a teaching degree, but she graduated and taught elementary school for 25 years. Abbott says she retired early when she began to develop post-polio syndrome. By her 60s, she had to use a wheelchair. She's now 80 and says she's relegated to her house most of the time.
Every day, something goes amiss. It's missing out of your life.
Abbott misses being able to just get up and walk to the bathroom or step into the shower. She lives less than a mile from the beach, but even that can feel far.
I can remember the feeling of standing in the water, and when the water comes in and it goes out, the different feeling that you have on your feet. Oh, I would love to be able to just go down there and stand and have that feeling in my feet.
Abbott, Arsenault, and Crocker are all members of the Post-Polio Support Group of Maine. Each of them says they're worried about the upcoming referendum that could repeal Maine's new law that aims to boost immunization rates by eliminating non-medical exemptions. Arsenault says he shows skeptical parents his leg brace.
I mean, I'll go to the doctor's office or any place, and I'll hear young mothers say, well, no, I'm not going to have my child protected against this. And I'll roll up my pant leg. I said, listen, if you don't want your child to have to wear one of these 7 days a week, 14 hours a day, then have at it.
Supporters of the repeal effort say there haven't been enough outbreaks or a large enough drop in vaccination rates to do away with non-medical exemptions. But Diana Abbott disagrees.
I want people to look at me and say, no, we need to vaccine because I don't want this to happen to anybody. I really don't. It's just too traumatic.
At its peak, the post-polio support group had 900 members. That's dropped almost in half as people have aged and passed away. But what's comforting, says Ann Crocker, is that vaccination has meant no members with new cases of polio are joining the group. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow for a live Maine Calling at 1 o'clock from the Camden Conference with David Brancaccio and a discussion on the changing media landscape. I'm Jennifer Mitchell.